Hello, friends. Welcome back to Time in the Studio. This is your host, Sarah Marie Miller, and I'm really excited to be here for our third episode today. I also wanted to just send a word of thanks for everybody who has just been showing their support and sending messages and ratings and reviews, and really cool to see people from all over the world listening. So wild. So yeah, thank you for your encouragement, and big hugs to all of you who like hugs. And I also want to remind you that I'm going to be teaching a workshop in Brooklyn, New York on June 19th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Antidote Apothecary and Tea Bar. That's in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. And the website is antidotebrooklyn.com. And yeah, it's going to be a class on digesting our experiences to heal old wounds. And yeah, we're going to be talking about flower essences, herbs, nutrition, and different practices you can do in order to connect the gut and the brain and really listen to your intuition and just get more traction moving forward and learning from your experiences and diving into the mystery of who you are. That brings me to our guest today, a near and dear friend, Matthew Namey, who is incredibly intuitive and just one of the most hilarious people that I've had the pleasure of hanging out with in my life. We met in New York when we worked together at a frame shop and used to get in trouble every day for laughing way too loud. So as I was recording this episode with him and going back through and kind of doing a little editing and trimming of things, I just noticed there is so much excessive laughter. So I tried to save you from the torture of nonstop giggles and edited out some of the laughter and whatnot. But yeah, I am just so excited to share the conversation with Matthew Namey today. Such an honor to have you here.
Oh my God, the honor to be here.
Awesome. So I would just love to hear a little bit about your path. I know you're an amazing artist and living in New York City, and what brought you there? What's going on?
Well, yes, it's true. I'm an amazing artist, and I live in pretty amazing. Just, can we just let that soak in?
Yeah.
Marinate in that first sentence.
Incroyable, like truly
remarkable. I'm originally from Charleston, South Carolina, and I moved to New York in 1999 to go to school, and I went to Hunter College, and so I was really young at the time. I was like 19, 20 years old, and school at the time was like a really easy way to get out of South Carolina and into New York, you know, to have an excuse to be here. So like I was registered at a school, and I was signed up for the dormitory, so I had a place to live. So that's really important, especially in New York. And being so young, I wasn't really like, I was on student. I did everything myself too, by the way. Like I didn't really tell my parents anything until like the very last minute.
Oh, wow.
I was always really independently minded, so like, so I was ready to just skip out and do my own thing at a very young age. So, so yeah, I got accepted to the school. I signed up for the dormitory. That was all approved. My student loans were all approved. Whatever, everything was ready to go, and I just showed up in New York, and everything was kind of set up for me through school, which was great. So, and I just stayed ever since. I mean, I didn't really have a plan in the beginning. I just knew that I needed to get to New York. And once I got there, I would figure the rest out later. And that's really what I did. My first year here, I took advantage of being on student loans and that kind of thing. So, not having to pay rent, I mean, through a dormitory. So, I still did have like a part-time job because I needed money for like food and transportation and stuff, but it was just a part-time job. So like I worked at like the school bookstore, and I did a couple like work study programs through school, was just to have some like pocket money. But which weren't too demanding, but still gave me the pocket money I needed. And in the meantime, that first year here, I really got to live like a tourist for an entire year. Like I went to all the museums constantly as much as I could. It was also part of my school program too, because I was in the arts program, to go to the museums, go to the gallery shows, really get into the New York art world. And I was seeing it for the first time. You know, I'd never been to New York. I just kind of showed up here for the first time, and I was just like, I live here now.
Wow, so courageous. That's amazing.
Well, I look back on it now, and at the time, I didn't think it was very courageous. Like, I just thought, yeah, whatever. I'm just, like, filling out paperwork and that kind of stuff and going through the motions. And then once I got here, it was really, like, years later, I was like, oh, my God, I was, like, a child. I look back on, like, old pictures of myself, and I was like, oh, my God, I was, like, really, like, a kid. I've thought a lot about, you know, I've lived in New York about 20 years now, and at times it's been very routine, you know, going through the motions, like going to work, going home, going to work, going home. Mm-hmm. And then at other times it's been a real struggle to stay here and be here and to like really to, you know, make it last, that kind of thing. So recently I've been thinking about moving again, but now, like now that I'm older, I'm actually scared to just like pick up and move somewhere. You know what I mean?
Well, leaving New York is such a major endeavor. It's not easy because New York spoils you. Like, it's hard to go anywhere else after you've lived there.
Right. It's the best. And also the worst, I think.
Yes.
Like,
definitely.
It's the best and the worst. So, but yeah, New York is really, really tough. It's a really hard place to live. It's hard on people in general. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really hard on artists in particular because, I mean, and we've talked about this before, but I think it's harder on artists in particular because artists are sensitive. They're very, very sensitive. They have to be sensitive in order to be an artist, and you know, you're more absorbent to the world around you. And when the world around you, i.e. New York, is hostile, aggressive, uncomfortable, rude, you know, like all that stuff, like nasty, like it's just like, it's just like, it kind of, my feelings get crushed almost on a daily basis, you know, like, I have to like work against that or work around it every single day. So like, more so than I think, you know, a regular person, like an accountant or a lawyer or like, et cetera.
Right. I think there is something to that. Like artists are, we are like little antennas for the world. Like we're just picking up messages all the time, and it is really complicated in New York because there's just so much activity and so much energy, and it can be really overwhelming. And so I think people kind of build these boundaries around themselves that are, it's different. Like when you're in New York, it feels so lonely sometimes, even though you're surrounded by so many people.
Oh, totally. Yeah. It's like, and you said it perfectly, which is the, you have to build this barrier around, a protected blister around yourself in order just to be here. But especially an artist, I feel like your protected blister has to be thicker than other people's. So, which is a protective measure. It's a good thing, but it's also can be bad if you don't know how to lift that veil, at least periodically.
Yeah.
Because it can make you crazy, I mean, or just make you depressed. I recently, I'm more aware of that right now because I took a weekend trip to Montreal. A few weeks ago, and I loved it. And it's just that, I love Montreal, I've been there before, but the it's just that every now and again you have to like take a break from the city, you know, until really just to let that protective blister dissolve, even if it's just for a weekend. And you don't even realize you have that protective blister up until you go somewhere else and you're like, oh my God, I'm such an asshole. Like my guard is really, really off right now. And like, I won't even let somebody conversate with me in the slightest way without shutting them down, you know? Like,
yeah, totally. I mean, I remember living in New York, I had a friend from Tennessee come to visit, and she was baffled that people don't talk to each other in the street. And I was like, do not talk to strangers. And she was just like, you know, walking down the street, like smiling at everybody and talking. I'm like, don't do that. You're going to bring home like crazy.
They're going to think you're crazy or like mentally disabled. I mean, when I was in Montreal, like, you know, and this is when you sort of realize that protective blister can be a really bad thing. And in this moment, I realized that, and that when I was in Montreal, I went thrift store shopping and I found this, like, you know, fox fur coat for like
$120.
I couldn't believe it. And I was like, oh my God. So I bought it. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm rocking that coat and I have my sunglasses on and like, I'm doing the most, girl. Oh, I'm
here. I love it. Yes.
I'm totally giving like a, celebrity on vacation sort of look, and like I'm walking down the street, I'm living it, I'm like, I'm tall, I'm thin, I speak French,
love
people
it.
People are like, yeah, and I'm aware of all that, and I'm walking down the streets of Montreal in my like Canadian fur and like living, and like this guy comes up, yeah, just living my life, you know, doing the most, and like this guy comes up to me and he's like, just starts telling me in French, but he starts telling me like, oh, I love your coat. You look great. Blah, blah, blah. Da, 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 da. You just talk like just to initiating a conversation.
Right.
And I immediately threw my hands up and I was like, oh, who, what? I'm not trying to. And I was immediately hostile toward him.
Oh, like, yeah.
It was like a knee-jerk reaction. I was like, you know, don't try to talk to me. I think that's what the aggression comes from. Because I'm like, okay, you're approaching me. You must want something. But that's New York. You know, like, people are selfish and hostile. But that's why it's so important to leave. I think especially for artists. Like, because your spirit gets kind of warped by it. And I could see that. I was like, oh, I really need a vacation. Like, I feel like a little warped by this. Like, there's no reason for me to be hostile toward this guy. He's just trying to give me a compliment.
Right. Yeah. I think that's good that you could notice that about yourself and the situation too.
Well, I only really recognized that once the guy was like walking away, like he was like, oh my God, you know, like,
he's like, he must be from New York.
Like, you know, like, so, yeah. And then I got back to New York and then I had to put my guard back up again. And it was like so disheartening. It was like depressing that I had to like put up that front all over again because I just put it down and then I had to put it back up. And it was like, ugh.
Yeah, it's really disorienting, I think, to have those shifting boundaries and just that shifting way that you have to function in the world so differently. Like, when I came to Boulder, I was like so confused. I was like, why are the buildings so short and everyone is wearing tie-dye? Like, I don't get it.
In New York, my whole life is art, you know? Mm-hmm. So like, I mean, I work at a very high-end frame shop. We work with really high-end artwork all the time. Like, I handle and frame, you know, I mean, you name it. As you know, like, I've handled it, touched it, like, totally. Worked with it, not just seen it, but like handled it too, and like touched it and everything. The last show I saw actually was in Montreal. Like, I went to the National Art Museum there.
Oh, and, cool.
At the Napoleon exhibit.
Oh my God, and funny.
It was amazing. Like, they had all kinds of stuff from the Napoleonic era, like, including portrait paintings, furniture, clothing, from different types of robes and dresses. And they had different types of like chairs. They had like thrones and then they had like, you know, simple chairs. They even had like bird cages. Like, they had like a variety of objects, like glassware, flatware, like the Napoleonic like vibe just kind of extended to like lifestyle and everything. I mean, they were doing Versace like way before it. You know? It was amazing.
That is incredible. That sounds so fun. And you were there with your fox fur coat on?
Doing the most. Yeah. Living my life.
Oh, yes. Fabulous. Fabulous. And
sunglasses, like, oh yeah. I mean,
doing sunglasses in the museum. You're like, these lights are too bright.
I'm from New York. Okay. Get out of the way. I'm a celebrity. No. Shut up. Asshole.
Oh my God, I love
very bad. People are like, oh my God, I was just like, boom, get out of the way. Elbowing him like an old lady out of the way.
Oh my God, you are too cute.
But it's like, that's kind of like where my life is going right now, artistically. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's a variety of things. It's like, you know, I'm still doing painting, but like I do abstract painting, I do portrait painting, I'm working with like coats and fur coats.
Oh, cool.
And stuff like that. I'm kind of like doing a lot of different things and I'm just going with it. You know, like I feel like when I was younger, especially in school, like they kind of try to pigeonhole you into one thing to say like, okay, you're a watercolor painter, you know, or like you're a portrait painter or you're an abstract painter or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Like they try to make you find a niche and then really run with that, which I understand that that's good, but that's not necessarily everybody's path and everybody's works differently. And I think especially for an artist, it's important to be open to all those possibilities, because who knows, you may be a painter, sculptor, fashion designer. You
know, like, yes, I love you that.
You know, why not? You know, who speaks French and whatever. Like, you may be all kinds, you may be like 20 of those things.
You know? What are you doing with the coats? What does that look like?
Well, I have this idea because I love fur, but I hate the fur industry and how it's like, especially like what I mean specifically is like brand new furs. Because they're like, you know, they really like, I'm sure we've all seen the videos, they like torture these animals to get their fur off.
It's awful.
And they pay like, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars for these brand new fur coats. And meanwhile, if you ever like go to like, just for instance, if you ever go to like eBay or Amazon and just type in vintage fur coat or just fur coat, you'll find like a ton of like used fur coats for like really cheap, like $100. Even you can get a rabbit fur coat for like $30. Like, it's kind of incredible. I mean, it's also kind of sad too that, like, you know, once you buy a fur coat, like the value goes down or something. And like, you know, reselling it is kind of like, you know, you really get like very little to nothing from it. So my idea is to like reclaim these furs and then change them by like making them more modern. So like, I got this extra large coyote women's, it's called a swing coat. So it has like shorter, it has like 3/4 sleeves and a lot of material at the bottom. So it swings. It's like,
wow. Swing coat.
So, I wanted to wear it. So, so I cinched it in at the waist to make it more like a straight cut, like a bomber jacket type of look. And then I added, like, I got like a cheap gray hoodie, like $12 from like around the corner. And I cut the sleeves off and ruched them and then attached them to the fur coat sleeves. And then I took the hoodie I took the actual hoodie and then separated it and then attached the hoodie to the fur coat.
Whoa, that's amazing. I want to see this.
With the hoodie, I attached all these like weird, funky, like buttons and pins and like, like a button from a band or you know, just make it real juvenile, you know, like that.
Yeah.
Because like, I wanted to go for like, you know, a little kid who stole his mom's fur coat and screwed it up, you know.
Oh wow. And then,
I was really inspired by Fendi, and they do like belts on their arms and stuff like that,
Oh, right.
I got a couple of belts from like Burlington Coat Factory for like $10 a piece. And then they're a similar color to the fur. And then I sewed it to the sleeve. And then I got a bag charm for also from eBay for like $10, like a fur, raccoon fur bag charm or something. Like it has like an angry face on it. It's like so stupid. So I attached that to one of the belts. So I've got this like fur coat that's now fitted to my body with like hoodie sleeves that are ruched that look totally silly and irreverent. And then the hoodie, which covered in buttons and stuff, which is also totally like makes it more street and stuff like that. And then the belts, which just kind of throw people off. And then like the little bag charm attached to the angry face bag charm makes it like so silly and stupid, you know, and I'd love it.
God. Yeah, I would need to see this. This is incredible.
Well, people actually, when I wear that coat, people stop me in the street and go, "Oh my God, where'd you get that coat?" Like, I love
Yeah.
it. And I'm working on like a black rabbit coat. I'm kind of doing a similar thing to it. I got a black hoodie, then I attached a black hoodie to it. And I'm gonna do the black hoodie sleeves on it also. And I'm gonna attach some like belts to it. It's gonna be black on black on black. It'll
Oh,
be
I
cool.
love that.
It'll be very like New York S&M type of thing. Like I got like this black leather gun holster, and so I dismantled it. I took off the gun holster part because I don't want to sew a gun holster to like my body because then some people are gonna be like think I'm crazy and stuff. But like, so I took that part off and threw that away. But like, I'm just using like the belts and the straps and stuff. So I'm attaching that to the fur, and it has a really, really hot look.
Amazing. And then are you still painting too?
Well, so far I feel like I've taken a break from painting, but like I'm still like making.
I love your word series that you did too. Are you still working on that, or is that kind of
Well, and that's the
happening?
another thing too. Right now, I'm like, as you can see, I'm sort of branching out into all different things.
I
Like,
love it. It's so good.
yeah, the word art. I don't know. You know, it's so funny. Like, I just like, kind of, I'm on. I sell my work, sell that work on this website called Vango. I've had things on there for about a year, and I've had maybe like I've done maybe like 50 of these things, and I've sold probably like 40 of them
That's awesome.
for like $100 each. So and they haven't all sold at once. I mean, they sold sporadically here and there, you know, one here, two there, that kind of thing. But over the course of the year, I probably sold like 40 of them, which is cool. And I was just about to give up on them, and then I got an email from Vango saying I sold one. So like
Yeah, I love those. They're just so funny. Like, I just, the one that I always go back to is, are we still talking about this?
Yeah.
Because I just remember when we worked together in New York, like that was just my favorite thing that
Love those little flat sayings and every
Yeah.
thank you, by the way. And I do still think of ideas like a word art ideas. Like I thought of one the other day, which was I overheard that in somebody else's conversation, but it's funny how you can be inspired by any random thing. Like as an
Oh,
artist,
yeah.
like, you know, you're very sensitive, as you were saying before, and you're sensitive to the world around you, and you can catch inspiration from any random moment. That's it just has to do with your mindset. So I was on the train and I heard these two girls talking, and one girl says to the other girl, does anyone know you're doing this? And I just thought it was
That
I
is
was
a good one. That is
like,
a really good one.
that's a good
Does
line.
anyone know you're doing
Does anyone know you're doing this?
this?
That's a really good line.
That would be a good one for somebody to buy, like for right next to their bed or something.
I'm like, you know, I could take that sentence and like write and then put it on and do a word art thing on it, and it would be hysterical.
Yeah, it could be the name of your next series.
Kind of like it makes I like what those phrases do because it's flat, but it's also evocative. It kind of it makes you think, and it makes you kind of like wondering what's the rest of the conversation, you know, like, and that's the whole point, you know, like, or what are they talking about? You picture like these two people talking, and then one of them says that line, and you're like, oh, what's the rest, you know?
I love that about the subway too. Like you just catch these little glimpses of people's lives and their conversations and their way of being in the world. And it's just like this really interesting. Yeah, it makes you wonder, like, okay, what does the rest of their life look like? So I'm curious, what is your studio like? Where do you have a separate space at home or a separate space somewhere else? Or do you like to work out in the world? Or what is where does that creative space start and stop for you?
For me, my studio is my apartment. And I really prefer it that way rather than like, you know, across the street or like another place. Because I like my creature comforts. You know, I like to make tea or coffee or like have little snacks and things like that. And I like to stop and start. Like, I like to work on a project for like maybe 20 minutes and then take an hour break. And then work for like 3 hours straight and then finish for the day, you know, kind of thing. Like I work kind of sporadically and there's no like I don't really set the timer or anything like that. So it's hard for me to like I don't think of it as like in a traditional sense, like at work you're clocked in for work, right? You have to be there from 9 to 5 or whatever it is. And you have to oblige to that schedule. But like when I'm at home and doing my own work, like it's just kind of like, what's the schedule? What's the clock? I'm not looking at it. It's not like that. So I like it, that being at home allows me to do that, basically. I feel like if I were at a studio, I would be more aware that I'm not at home and, you know, that kind of thing. It allows me to be more free, put it that way. That's what I'm trying to say. And my space is really like I'm a very neat, organized person, and my space is also very neat and organized. There's like a place for everything and everything in its place. So like
That's
I
awesome.
know where everything goes, and you know, I'm very tidy. When you know when I'm working on a project, things kind of spill out all over the place, and I can get messy during the project, but then after the project, everything gets put back pretty neat and tidy.
Oh, I need to learn from you. That sounds amazing.
Because it's okay to like, you know, the creative process is messy, like, and I understand that. Like, it's okay to get some paint on the floor, or you know what I mean? Like, it's okay to kind of spread your stuff out. And like, I'm also a clumsy person too. Like, believe me, I will make a hot cup of tea and then knock it over 5 minutes later. I'll be like, damn
Yes.
it. But like,
I do that all the time. I'm like constantly spilling coffee on the floor. I'm like, oh God. Oops.
and that's why I use that ex that that because I do that all the time too. It's insane. It's frustrating, but I've learned to just be like, oh well, whatever, it's happened.
Remember the first time I ever met you? I was just like, oh my God, you are the coolest person ever. And we were both really into yoga. And I just picked up right away that you're a very intuitive person too. And I know we've a couple times we've traded tarot readings, and you're just incredibly good at tarot readings. So I was just curious if you wanted to talk a little bit about your intuitive sense and how that works with your creative drive.
Thank you. Yeah, and I guess that's another thing too, like another tool in your kit, so to speak. For me, it's being intuitive and being psychic and that kind of stuff, and being able to see things before they happen has always been something that I've had. When I was really young, I was aware of it, but didn't really know what to do with that. Like, you know, like, what is the reason for this, or how do I work with this, or what is the point of having this talent, you know? And it's still kind of like, I guess it's a protective thing, or it could be used in that way, but if you see like, you know, if you see yourself in a plane crash, then, you know, you have a plane to catch the next day. Maybe you cancel the flight or something. Right. You know, there's like, but I mean, that's a big thing, but like, it can be even little things. I mean, most of the time, I think it's just little things. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you picture yourself being delayed on your commute to work or, you know, and then the next day you're late on your commute to work and you're like, right. not surprised by it. You're like,
right.
You're like, yep, I saw this one coming. You know, like stuff like that. Like, stuff like that happens to me every day.
Mm-hmm.
It also kind of makes things anticlimactic, you know, like I said,
you're like, sign up.
Yeah, I like, there's no surprises with me ever. It's hard to surprise me with anything because I've already know.
Like,
so, it kind of makes life a little bit like boring, a little bit like, oh, you know, like, like, yeah, I got the memo like 2 days ago, you know, that was gonna happen. So by the time it actually happens, it's not interesting anymore. Like, it's
right. Like, you told me you used to live in New Orleans and you left
right before Katrina. Yeah. I guess that, you know, I guess that also comes back to what we were saying earlier about it's the psychic ability can be used as a preventative, like keeping you safe kind of measure.
Yeah.
And in that way, it totally did. But I have to say, like, and anybody who's intuitive will tell you the same thing, is that it's one thing to receive a message. It's another to act on that message, to make action. So basically I got the message, that New Orleans was not going to be there anymore and I needed to leave like ASAP. Like, I got that message loud and clear. Like, I mean, and when I say loud and clear, I mean loud and clear. Like, it was, and it came to me in a nightmare. I just like woke up one day, like, in a fever, like in a cold sweat and panicked. Like, I just saw a lot of death and destruction and horror, in a vision. And I woke out of it, and it was so vivid and so strong. Like, I woke up in the middle of the night, like, panicked, like completely panicked. And I knew what that meant. I was like, I knew exactly what it meant. I was like, get out of New Orleans, get out of New Orleans, get out of New Orleans. So at the time, like, I had a whole life there. I mean, I had an apartment in the French Quarter, a nice apartment too, by the way. Like, it was beautiful.
So beautiful.
I worked for a French hat maker, and she was like the French, she was the fashion designer of New Orleans. Like, she was the most well-known. Her name was Yvonne Lefleur.
Oh, I love that.
I know, she's amazing. And she still lives down there, still doing her work. But anyway, like, I had a job, I had an apartment, I had a boyfriend. Like, you know, like, so I had like a small group of friends. I didn't live in New Orleans very long. It was total 9 months, but I always knew it was temporary too, but basically, you know, right after I had that dream the next day, that next morning I woke up, I quit my job. I put in a 2 weeks notice with my job. I put in a 4 week notice with my apartment, and I broke up with my boyfriend all on the same day.
Wow. That's amazing.
So the point of saying that is that, like, I got the message and then I heeded the warning and I took action on it right away. And also somehow in that dream, I knew that dream wasn't going to happen. I knew the actuality of that dream was, I knew it was going to happen, but I knew it wasn't going to happen tomorrow. Like, I knew it was going to be a little while. So I knew that I had a number of weeks. So, although, you know, not exactly sure how much time, but I knew I had like a number of weeks. So, I put in the 2 weeks notice with my job, and then that 2 weeks notice ran out. And then I had like another 2 weeks with the apartment. But something came up where like it was somehow it was easier for me to book my plane ticket on a third week rather than that fourth week. So I went ahead and booked the ticket for the third week, and then and then so I left. So basically, you know, I paid for a week with that apartment that I didn't live there. But anyway, when I got back, like New Orleans started to, like the storm started to hit, like when I got back. So it was like, yeah, I mean, sometimes things just happen and you just have to go with it. Like that, like the timing for the plane ticket thing. Like, I wasn't sure why it was all of a sudden it was like, no, you have to go this week. Basically, the universe was telling me, no, it's got to be this week. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I'm just going with it, right? I don't know why, but I'm just going with it.
So powerful.
Yeah, and then I get on a plane and back to New York, a one-way ticket back to New York, and then the storm hit, Katrina, and it was destroyed. Like, New Orleans was destroyed. Everybody knows the rest of the story, but it's yeah, I missed that disaster by minutes, basically, in a way. It was incredible. And I'm eternally grateful. And I do think about that every now and again. And I just say thank you. But I also say thank you to myself, too, because, like, I'm the one that I received the message, but I also acted on it, too. Right. So I'm grateful for having received the message, but I'm also grateful to myself for taking action on it, too.
Yeah, because I think oftentimes we get messages, but then we don't listen to our gut and we just, you know, ignore our intuition. And
right. Yeah. And that will get into trouble.
Yes. More and more, I'm just like, oh, never doubt my intuition ever again. Like, it is right.
Yeah, totally. And everybody has that. You don't have to be psychic to have that. I mean, I feel like everybody's a little bit psychic, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And like, some people are more in touch with it than others. And I feel like I'm just one of those that's more in touch with it than others. Mm-hmm. It's not that I have some like incredible, great ability. I mean, I feel like maybe I have some of that, but I feel like I've met other people in my life that have it much more than I do. Much more talented than I am in that regard. But I have like maybe half as much talent as they do in that regard, but I really listen to everything that I get. Although I really listen to all those messages.
Yeah, it's so powerful. It's awesome.
It could be life or death. You really never know. I mean, that's the one thing about those kind of messages, is that you really don't know what it is. Like the plane ticket thing, I use that as an example because, I mean, I could have paid extra money and gone on that fourth week. You know what I mean? I had the option, but somehow like my intuition was like, no, you have to go this week. It's like, yeah, you're saving a little bit of money. It was like saving $100 or something. It was saving a little bit, but it really wasn't that much. It's like, spend $100 more than I get an extra week in New Orleans. Right. I was like, go on a third week. And I just I'm like, okay. I just went on a third week.
Wow.
And it ended up being really important that I went on that week.
Yes.
I just didn't know until all of a sudden I get back to New York and, you know, Katrina starts hitting and it's like, oh shit, that's why I had to go on that week. So yeah, I try to use that intuition in my daily life and also my art.
Yeah. I love your other paintings too, of the figures that are kind of a little bit abstracted or simplified, and the way that you would distress the fabric and kind of alter it or dye it with coffee or tea or other natural materials, and then you would paint over them. Do you want to talk about that process a little bit? How you got into that?
Yeah. I started doing portraits. Like, I've been doing portraits for a long time. I would say probably since like 2000 or 2001, I started doing portraits. And they've evolved over time. Like, at first it started to be more like sharp, clean lines on like, you know, plain, solid backgrounds. And then I got into using fabric for the backgrounds, sort of like filling up the space more, like more detail. And then I was like, sort of in that vibe of like adding more detail. So then I thought about like, instead of using pattern fabric, using a plain solid fabric, but like bleaching it, and then that becomes the pattern. Or then like bleaching it and then pouring coffee on it, and then, you know, that becomes the background. So it was about like adding detail, but in like a raw, organic way.
Yeah.
And speaking to that, I wanted to use organic materials like coffee, tea, rust, ashes, all kinds of like different things, thinking outside of the box to, as I call it, to let it happen, you know, to like sort of like take a cup of coffee and like, I'm clumsy, like, you know, I will take a cup, I'll spill a cup of coffee and then I'm like, you know, it'll spill all over the floor. And it's like, you know, what if I kind of like recreated that on a canvas, you know, or on a fabric? So I would take a cup of coffee and then like, oops, spill it. And then instead of like, if it was on the floor, I'd have to like clean it up. But if it's on a canvas and I'm like, okay, I'm going to let this dry and see what happens.
Yeah.
And then from there, paint like a beautiful image on top of that.
Oh, so cool. Yeah, I love that series. It's really beautiful. Is that on your website?
Technically don't have a website.
But, okay.
Because my style was changing a lot, I think I want to get away from doing portraits and do more abstract work. And then maybe also explore more fashion design stuff too. Because I'm really, really loving, I love doing abstract stuff. And I love fashion design too. And I feel like that's kind of taking me away from portraits. And I'm okay with that.
You know, yeah.
It's more like, you know, again, sort of trusting your intuition and going with it. Mm-hmm. And like, yeah, I mean, I've done portraits for almost 20 years, but now I don't, and I feel like a kid. I'm like, I don't want to do portraits.
Yeah. I think it's great to just try something different, you know, and like shoot off in another direction and give yourself that freedom and not confining your vision.
Exactly. Like giving yourself the allowance to change. Because, you know, life is a crooked path and things change and life changes and brings you into a different realm you weren't expecting.
Yeah.
You know, like sometimes you move to New Orleans and then have to all of a sudden move back.
it's
like, just go with it. Like, don't ask like, just go with it.
Yeah, I love that.
And I feel like I'm doing the same, I'm following the same instinct with leaving portraits behind. And I'm not saying forever, I'm just saying for right now that I feel like I want to leave portraits behind and go into abstract stuff and also, you know, maybe fur coat design too.
Yeah, cool.
Other kinds of fashion design.
Yeah, it's like part of the dance right now.
Right. Right. And even dance itself too.
You know, yeah. Like, are you dancing? I know you were taking ballet for a while.
Yeah. And that's, I was taking ballet pretty intensely for 2 years. And I had two teachers that really like believed in me and really wanted to, I was taking ballet probably, you know, at least 3 times a week.
Wow.
And I was in a mentorship program with one of my teachers, Scott. I was taking private classes with him as well as more like private group classes with him too, and I was getting better and better, and you know, and I have the body and the shape for it, like from yoga, like I'm sort of like long and lean, so inflexible, so like that transferred over into ballet really easily.
Right.
So I didn't really know a lot of the moves, but if they could, if they showed me, then I could copy it and do it perfectly. So there was like a lot of potential there for me to kind of like, you know, ballet, like any other dance, is like taking one movement or one pose and another pose and another pose and like linking it together to make a movement.
I like that.
Yeah. And you know, that's like any other dance, every kind of form of dance is like that. I feel like ballet is a good place to start, you know, it's sort of like the basis for modern dance and all that other stuff. But I think I stopped about, several months ago because I was starting a new job at Lowy and sort of overwhelmed and consumed with that. But it's also like, I felt like what I got out of dance was sort of, it helped me to kind of change my mindset up a bit. And I felt like that's really what I needed from it. I didn't really want to become a dancer. Like, I felt like I could do that because I have the body and the shape for it and the flexibility. But I couldn't see myself going on auditions.
Right.
And like really doing it and enjoying that. Like, I was like, that's not really where I want to go.
Figured out a lot from that experience.
Yeah. And I think what I needed from that is like, and I may still like, I'm not closing myself off from taking ballet classes ever again or anything like that. It's just like, if I get the urge to take some more classes, I will. Mm-hmm. But for the meantime, I think what I really needed from taking ballet was to get out of the yoga mindset, because I was doing yoga almost obsessively. I was doing yoga maybe 5 times a week for years, at least 15 years. Mm-hmm. I was doing it a lot. I was really, really into it. And I think I needed to break the routine, because ballet is a lot like yoga, but it is also at the same time, completely different.
Are there any self-care routines or anything you do to kind of help yourself through the highs and lows of being an artist? Like, I feel like it's such a shifting path and there can be some struggles inherent in that, crooked path.
Oh my God. Yeah. And I think especially for an artist, we're more sensitive than other people. So we really have to take that self-maintenance and self-care, I think, more seriously than other people. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I take very, very good care of I really baby myself.
I love that. So sweet.
It sounds funny to say that out loud, but it's true. I do. I'm the biggest baby, and I do pamper myself, as much as I can.
Yeah, good for you.
And I pamper myself in ways that are things that I know are good for my body. Like, I eat really good food, and eating the kind of food that works best for you has a lot to do with keeping your body and your mind healthy just from the start. So starting there, I eat a lot of kale and spinach salads every day. That's pretty much all I eat with vegetables. And then I do go to the gym. Probably not too much. I'd probably say 3 days a week. Mm-hmm. And I'm not crazy about the gym either. I spend maybe 45 minutes to an hour there each time I go. And I'm not pumping iron. It's more maintain. That's really what it is. Mm-hmm. And the food too is not I'm not crazy obsessed with it, but I do believe in good ingredients and eating the right things to set your body up to be in the best place that it can possibly be. Yeah. So and I get enough sleep. I don't really drink at all. Except I might have a glass of wine with socially or something here and there, but that's pretty rare.
So amazing. Yeah. You do take such good care of yourself. That's awesome.
Yeah. And I use sunscreen every day. It's really important, certain things like that. It's all about protecting your body in the ways that, and which I like to say to myself, which is really setting yourself up in the best way possible, so that you can live a long, happy, healthy life. I have the option to run the marathon at 80 if I want to, or not if I don't want to, of thing. It's important to realize that too. It's not a fad. It's a lifestyle. This is it, this is your life now. So get into it, But I mean, that's what it's about. I want to maintain a strong, healthy body so that, so that I can continue to create art and whatever it is that I see as art, you know, whether it's like repurposing a fur coat or word art or a portrait painting or a wood panel with distress gold, whatever it is, like, I want to be able to do that.
I know you love books. Have you read anything recently that you want to talk about?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I read all the time. And reading is one of my passions and one of my favorite things to do, actually. So it's cool we're talking about this. But yeah, I've been a reader my whole life. My mom got me into it when I was like a kid, like very, very young. I knew how to read before. I knew how to read and write my name and my address and phone number and all that before preschool.
That's awesome.
My mom was very like into teaching me that like at a really young age. So, and I'm very grateful to her for that. But
yeah,
I recently read Remains of the Day by Kazuo Ishiguri. I'm pronouncing that wrong, but it's called, the title of the book is called Remains of the Day, and it won a Pulitzer Prize. I love reading Pulitzer Prize books because they're always good, and like Nobel Prize winners, or even like the, you know, the runners up and that kind of stuff. I get into that kind of stuff too. Always really, really good books. But I just finished Remains of the Day a little while ago. And if you haven't read it, it's interesting. Like, it's really good. I think especially if you're in the service industry. Because it's about a butler, an English butler, who has been a butler his entire life. His father was a butler for, you know, a lord of this estate. And that particular lord dies, and then an American, a rich American guy comes in, buys it, and he's still working there, this old English butler. And he has to adjust to, you know, the times changing. And this is, it takes place around like the 50s.
Oh, cool.
And so it's kind of like, you know, times are changing, things are becoming more modern and more streamlined, and the old ways are going out the window and the new ways are coming in, type of thing. So it's all about that, but it's also about the service industry too. And like, I think it's an older mentality to let your job consume you. And it's a newer mentality to you consume the job. It's the other way around. It's like, don't live for work. You don't live just for your job. You live for yourself, and work allows you to do that. Like, that's
That is, I think that is kind of the new mentality, which is, I like much better.
Well, it's just real. Like, because it's also that I think our bodies are living longer, and, you know, the idea of working for the same person, doing the same thing for 30 years and then getting a gold pocket watch is just dissolved. I mean, it doesn't happen anymore. People don't do that. So the chances of you having a job for like a couple years and then getting another job are way more likely. You know, like, and that's fine. That's totally good, because it's like, it's, I live my life for me. It's not for, I don't, you know, I'm a picture framer right now for Lowy, but.
But you're an artist always, like.
But I'm an artist always. I'm not sure, like, how long I'm going to be a picture framer for Lowy, but we'll see where life takes me. And I'm certainly open to changing jobs if the right moment comes about, or maybe keeping it if it works out better to keep it. But the point is, like, I'm flexible and I'm open to, like, I have no, like, I mean, I don't need to, like, I don't have this fantasy in my head that I'm going to have this job until I retire.
Right.
Or the idea of retirement, even that is like, I don't know if there actually is going to be a retirement for me. I think artists don't really retire, you know?
Yeah, it's true. I think I can't imagine ever stopping. I'm like, when do you, if you're making stuff, how do you just decide to stop making that?
Yeah, And what would I actually do then at that point? I would just be like, watching TV and movies and stuff all day.
Sounds awful.
That's not like my life. That's not who I am. I mean, yeah, I enjoy TV and movies and stuff, but like as a downtime, relax time, but like not all the time.
So Matthew, I just have a couple more questions. I'm curious if there's any artists that you are looking at that you really adore, if there's like a piece of work by one artist, alive or dead, who that would be, or artist you're looking at now.
I love several artists, but one artist that I really feel like I connect with a lot, at least it really just the mentality, is Agnes Martin. I love Agnes Martin. She's just one of my favorite artists. And it's really like has more to do with her mentality rather than her work. Although I really do enjoy and love her work profoundly. I love it. But I read her biography and I was really fell in love with her from that point on, her mentality and just who she is. And she's very intuitive. I don't think that she really talks about it that much at all, but she's very intuitive and you can see it in her life, although she never actually said that, that she's intuitive, but it's all about waiting for the right moment. She actually didn't discover success in the art world until she was probably in her 40s. Before that, she was like a school teacher for like, up until then, really. But she allowed room for that. It's not like she was bummed out about being a school teacher and really wanted to be an artist, and like it was, became bitter that it didn't work out until 40 something. But it was the other way around. It's like she, I really, f and she didn't say this either, but this is just my observation. I feel like she was like on the slow cooker, if that makes any sense. Like she was marinating until the slow cooker clicked done, kind of thing. And that just happened for her. That happened when she was in her 40s. And I really admire that because I feel like the reason why is because I feel like I'm along the same path. Like I feel like I'm on the slow cooker. And honestly, I feel like I'm still developing in like a cocoon type stage. And I'm not ready to come out of the cocoon yet. Like I recognize that, I understand it, but the cocoon is starting to open. But we're not there yet. And I'm okay with that. Like I'm still developing and growing. I feel like I'm not really even a full-on adult yet. Because I mean, everybody's path is different.
If not, how can we find your work if you want to be found?
Well, it's funny, like I'm sort of in a process of changing a lot too. So like I don't my website isn't up anymore right now, but I do have word art on Van Gogh. If you go to like Google and just type in my name, Matthew Namy, then at least Van Gogh will come up, but not a whole lot will come up, which is actually I kind of like it that way for the moment. I'm sort of under the radar at the moment, and I feel like that's just what's happening right now.
Yeah, I think that's beautiful to be in a little cocoon phase, you know? I think it's helpful to grow and develop in some privacy, in a private realm.
Yeah, I think for me, that's a really good way to put it right now, too, privacy. Certain things like, I mean, I had a Facebook and an Instagram, or I have a Facebook account and I have an Instagram account, but I recently deleted my Instagram account really for that. I was like, you know what? I wasn't using it very much and it was more about the emotion behind it. Like, I don't need to put stuff out the content out there. It's not like I was putting out anything controversial or even weird or anything like that. It's just that I'm more in that cocoon type stage. And I've thought about deleting my Facebook page, but I haven't, just because I'm still in touch with like some relatives through there and stuff like that. So maybe I'll hold on to that just for that purpose. But I did end up changing my name on Facebook because I didn't want to be as visible. Like I still want to be in touch with those family members or a few close friends that are easier to be in touch with through Facebook. But other than that, like I really don't want to be found right now. Mm-hmm. I want to be more in that cocoon stage.
Yeah. And I think that's so beautiful and profound. So we won't have any links for your, maybe we could do a link for your Van Gogh work.
Yeah. If you go to vango.co, mm-hmm. If you just type in my name, Matthew Namey, then it'll come up. There's not a whole lot there. It's so funny. Right now I really don't have much of an online presence, which I really like.
Yeah. There's something so refreshing about that. Like just stepping away from it. Cause it is such a time suck. Like I go onto Instagram and then it's like, wait, I just lost an hour. Like, what did I do? Nothing.
Well, and if it works for you, then it works. If it's, you know, if it serves a purpose that mm-hmm. works, then go for it. But for me, that's really what it is. It's just, for me, it wasn't serving much of a purpose. I was like losing time. I was wasting time. Mm-hmm. That's what I was doing on it. I was like, wait, I have plenty of projects that I really want to do. And actually, I really don't want to share with the world right now. You know, like,
yeah.
So, for me, it all comes back to, and I think for all artists in general, it really comes back to following your intuition. Mm-hmm. You know, when you need a break, you need a break. Just mm-hmm. like take that break and do it, but don't fight the break. You know, if you need to leave New Orleans and go back home to New York, then do it, you know, kind of thing. Like it's one of those things, like it's one thing to get the message, but it's also another to receive the message and then take action upon that message. Mm-hmm. So I think that's important for everybody, especially artists. But that's really what I want to say.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Matthew. It's just been such a delight to talk to you today. And yeah, thank you for making time for chatting and reflecting on your work. It's just really incredible to hear about your process and just the path that you've had thus far is really beautiful and moving. So really inspiring to chat with you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. And it's been a pleasure.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, we'll have a wonderful day. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you.